I usually make the recommendation. I'm curious what you think about this. With coding boot camps, if you go the coding boot camp route, given this market right now, I recommend about a year and 3 months of financial backing.
Welcome to Backend Banter. This is the show about backend development, technology, and careers. I'm joined today by Don the Developer. Can you go ahead and just introduce yourself, man?
Hey, everyone.
Yeah, I'm Don the Developer. Essentially, I just do my best to help out aspiring developers that are struggling. Market is a little rough right now, and so I'm just trying to create as much content as possible. I mentor junior developers, but yeah, I'm just trying to do whatever I can to get people to that finish line. So, but yeah, I really appreciate you inviting me on, Lane.
Yeah, totally. I mean, sometime in 2022, I guess early 2022, the market's been not what it was in 2020 and 2021. So I definitely get what you're talking about. I actually found you. I mean, you've got your YouTube channel, which is awesome, but I actually found you because a student of mine on Boot Dev told me that I should go look up your YouTube channel and have you on the podcast. So here we are.
Very cool. That's awesome. Do you mind sharing who it was?
I don't want to share his last name, but his first name's Matt, and he hangs out a lot in our Discord. A lot of people listening to this will kind of know Matt through the Discord.
Well, thank you so much, Matt.
Yeah, totally. I'm sure he'll be excited to listen to this one. Cool. So I want to start. We're going to talk a lot about career development, things like resumes and cover letters and all that good stuff. But I want to start by just getting a little bit of background on you so that everyone can kind of contextualize a lot of the stuff that we're going to talk about. So let's just start off by talking about, like, when did you first write your first line of code? Like, when did you get into programming?
Yeah. I knew I was always into computers, but I think I created my first website with XPage when I was like 13, 14 years old. I think I built a StarCraft website. I got audio up and it was cool. I was excited about it, but I knew I just liked the idea that I could just create something that's in front of everyone. That was crazy to me, especially when I was younger. And then at 18, I basically started a really small web hosting company. It was just me, but I was just gaining extra revenue. I rented out a server and I had a website and it looked really bad, but I got customers, which is really cool. But for me, and this kind of like evolved going into college as well and coding out different scripts for games, and I built a ticket system and just random stuff. But I've always loved just building stuff that solved my own problems. And that's essentially how I got into it. And I just let my curiosity, I actually used it as a de-stressor. And so like whenever I'd be stressed about college, or even when I made it out of college and got my first full-time job, I'd always on the side just code, and I'd just build random stuff that would serve a purpose for me and serve a purpose for other people. And eventually I realized you actually didn't need a CS degree, which was really enlightening, because I figured, man, I just spent all this money for college and now I want to, like, I really wonder what it's like to be a professional developer. I never really saw myself like that, but I remember watching videos on YouTube and just people saying, yeah, I didn't get a CS degree. I'm like, seriously? That's crazy. And so I kind of just started with a self-taught path for about 2 years, I think it was about 2 years, or no, 1 year and 9 months, just doing like stuff like Treehouse and different resources. And then I would live stream it on Twitch and I'd meet other developers like that. But I really got nowhere at all. And I was really frustrated and I was ready to give up. And then I finally decided to go to coding bootcamp. And then 6 weeks after that coding bootcamp, I got a job. And that's from here
that's
on,
awesome.
I just kind of wanted to give back.
Yeah, that's really cool. It's especially cool that you started with like this StarCraft project, because one of my very first coding projects ever was a StarCraft project as well. It was like a battle simulator where you could like input all the different units in your army and would kind of like do the damage per second calculations and tell you, like, in a perfect world, like in a vacuum with no like shuffling of units around, who would win in a fight, Zergling or a Zealot.
That's awesome. That's way more advanced than what I did. That's really cool though. So Were you like a StarCraft 1 fan or StarCraft 2 fan mainly?
It was StarCraft 2. This was like 2010, 2011 about. I was just like first year of college, last year of high school. I can't remember which actually. I kind of went straight out of high school into the like local college in my town. But yeah, that was a really fun project. And I think like if you can get into coding with those kinds of projects that you're just really passionate about, it's one of the best ways to just get in and get building some stuff.
And I just want to say, like, that's really important to realize. A lot of people, they want to get into coding and they go through some like very templated approach that kind of seems very monotonous and boring and tell me what to do. And I love when software engineers, like, they start with that curiosity and they're just like, oh, cool, I could build something. Let's build something for my game or like whatever it is. But that curiosity is so important.
Yeah, realizing you can do your own stuff is so critical. Like, I talk a lot about tutorial hell, right? And to me, tutorial hell is really when you're just like someone else is solving the problems for you, and you're kind of just like stepping through it, going through the motions. But when you can get out and like solve your own problem, you're really forced to kind of, you know, put a lot of the concepts that hopefully you have picked up through, you know, courses and videos and tutorials or whatever, really put them into practice and like make them your own. And all of a sudden you get why all this stuff actually matters.
Yes. Yeah. It all starts clicking together and it feels good when it does.
Yeah. Okay. So you kind of went this self-taught route. You said you went to college. So did you go to college for something non-CS related or was it a CS degree?
Oh yeah. I started with computer and I was in college for 7 years for my BS or bachelor's degree. And I transferred over, nothing transferred over, which was unfortunate, but I started with computer networking. I hated that.
And like so an I switched IT this, like, degree.
Yeah. 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 And it wasn't for me. I'm not saying it's a bad trajectory. It just wasn't for me. And so then I actually took Psych 101. And I'm like, this is fascinating. For some reason, that just really picked up my interest. And I just got a degree in psych and got to volunteer at a crisis center and got to explore that. But yeah, not programming at all. Cool.
Okay, yeah. So you started in computer networking, hard pivot away from technology, at least in college. And then after college, like, what made you want to get back into coding? I mean, I know you were like doing stuff on the side, but...
Yeah, I was an aquatics director in Illinois, making not a lot of money at all. I barely afforded rent, paid my bills. I was overworked, and I managed about maybe about 25 part-time staff, four different positions. And I love aquatics. I've taught swim lessons. I've lifeguarded. But I would find that I would get really stressed at my job managing teenagers, anyone that does it. I mean, kudos to you. It was a very difficult thing for me to do. And so to de-stress, I'd go home and I'd actually code. I would just, I don't remember what I was building, but I would just like learn, go through a course and then try to build something. But like, it just gave me this satisfaction, this fulfillment that I wasn't really getting as an aquatics director. And then I watched enough YouTube videos of enough people saying, like, I don't have a CS degree. And then it, like, I didn't even realize people were becoming software engineers without a CS degree. For some reason, I had it in my mind, like, you need it. You absolutely need it. I realized you didn't. And so I took the leap. I quit my job with like 3 months of savings or maybe at max 6 months of savings. And it took way longer. That was a struggle in itself, but yeah.
It was a surprise to me as well. So I did end up getting like a traditional CS degree, but I do remember being very surprised like when I got to my first job. So none of the jobs I ended up working actually required CS degrees. And I was really surprised. This is like 2015, 2016, by like when I was applying, how few job requirements I saw listed it as a requirement. It was usually like a preferred or a maybe or whatever, but like every job I worked at, it was usually only a half the team that would have a CS degree, right? You get to know your coworkers, you kind of get to know their background. I was always blown away by like this guy on my team and working for the same time as me, earning the same amount. He didn't go to college, right? Like he taught himself Vim and he watched a bunch of YouTube and he was working in like IT support, but was able to kind of like transition into development after writing a bunch of scripts and building some projects. So I was like really surprised. And it was pretty cool because frankly, I wasn't able to draw a line between my coworkers and be like, oh, the people with the CS degrees are the better developers. Like, that didn't I haven't seen that pattern emerge. Sometimes there's a pattern of like people with like a CS or a math background will be, you know, a little more prepared for like math heavy problems. But a lot of times those are kind of few and far between.
You know, like as someone, just when you go through the alternative path, I think you, and I think a lot of people realize they need to try way harder to like really stand out, because there are some companies that'll have some preferences towards CS degrees, but you really have to dive deep. It's like a lot of the self-taught developers, especially, they're the ones, they're just spending 8 to 10 hours a day. And sometimes they're very inefficient with their process, but they really want to get things down. And then they're like, okay, I don't have a CS degree, so how do I supplement some of that knowledge? Maybe I go to take CS50 from Harvard or something like that, right? They're hungry for it. And so I think that's where like those developers are the ones that make it. But unfortunately, there are a lot of like self-taught developers and even coding bootcamp grads that really don't have that solid foundation down, and they never make it. You don't get to work with them. And that's why.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Like when you're in, this is something I deal with a lot. Like, so I don't know how much you know about boot dev or if you've heard about it at all, but it's kind of like this self-taught path for learning backend development. And one of our things is like, this is going to take a long time and this is going to be a lot of work, right? Let's just like be upfront about that and understand that we're going to go deep on some of the like CS stuff that you would pick up in college, but a lot of boot camps or maybe self-taught paths don't go as in-depth on. And I've found that you like, as a self-taught developer, you're missing a lot of the pressure that you would get in something like even a bootcamp would actually have this a bit of this pressure. But like in college, right? Like I had a little scholarship when I was in college, and I had to maintain a certain grade point average if I was going to keep my scholarship. And if I didn't show up to class, if I didn't do the homework, right, I was like financially punished by losing my scholarship. And if you didn't go, then you didn't graduate. So there's also this social pressure, right, of like parents and friends, like you didn't want to drop out. So there was like all this external pressure that made it easier to move through a CS degree. And I've just noticed a lot of self-taught developers like don't have any of that. There's no social pressure. There's very little financial pressure, if any, right, depending on if you're using paid resources or free resources. And so from what I've seen, it's exactly what you said. To succeed as a self-taught person, it just requires more drive. Like you've got to be way more self-motivated, at least from what I've seen.
Yeah. And that's what I've found, that most self-taught developers will never make it as developers. They give up. And that's the reason why they don't make it. They give up. But it's a lot harder. That the problem is there are a lot of content creators that sell this dream of becoming a developer in 3 months and you're going to make 100K, right? And they have this expectation. They quit their job and then, you know, they give it a little bit of effort. But then when that motivation dies, they don't continue working on that project. They don't continue going through that course, right? They don't follow through with it. And it's like going through that path. And it was like this for me. It's like, I realized my self-discipline sucks. My resourcefulness sucks. Like everything about me paving my own path sucks. But education kind of supplemented that. And I realized I have so much to supplement. And like half the battle is really just building up good habits and you're kind of like breaking away from like that traditional educational model of having that pressure and then learning something to be able to memorize it, get a score. It's different with a self-taught path. You have to dive into projects. You have to get your hands dirty, have fun with it, and then allow that to drive you. But a lot of people, they just don't continue far enough to let that pull them to the end.
Yeah, it takes time. 3 months is crazy. I've seen that marketing material as well. I've never in my life met someone that went from zero to like hireable in 3 months. Like that's crazy. Like maybe if you like get a job as like a WordPress developer, so you're not really writing code, like maybe something like that. But I've, especially on the back end side, I've never seen that happen. You have to realize, like, you know, as a self-taught person, you are competing in the job market with people that do have CS degrees. Now, it's like there's some advantages there. A lot of people with CS degrees, like me, like didn't learn any practical tools in school. Like I had to go teach myself Git and like how to contribute to open source and like all this stuff like was not taught. It's also like a really lengthy process. Like I took a lot of nonsense classes when I was in college, things like acting that didn't really move me in the right direction. But like I tell people, unless you're like way up in like the first, I don't know, fifth percentile, or what would that be? 95th percentile. Like you're in the top 5% of self-taught devs. Like it's probably gonna take you at least a year. Like this is not something that you can like min-max and get done in just, you know, less than a few months.
I usually make the recommendation, I'm curious what you think about this, with coding boot camps, if you go the coding boot camp route, given this market right now, I recommend about a year and 3 months of financial backing. Self-taught path, about 2 years and 3 months of financial backing. And that's given like the data that I've been looking at for all the people dropping out and not becoming developers. So I know it's a long time and it's probably a lot longer than people think, but generally I see that kind of being the benchmark. And, you know, once the market gets better, which I think it will, and you can always like you could trim that down more, trim it down by doing a lot of the right things. But I'm talking about like the average person trying to become a software engineer. If you can get that financial backing, you stand a much higher chance. What do you think about those timeframes, Dal?
Those sound about right to me. When you say financial backing, are you like assuming that this person is the assumption this person's like quitting a job and doing this like full time?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. And it's kind of like to really get them to think, should I quit this job and do this full time?
Yeah. Okay. So like for a boot camp, definitely makes sense. I would say, yeah, at least a year. I mean, because you figure a good boot camp's going to be like 6 to 9 months, right? I know there's like all these other boot camps that will ostensibly do it faster, but I think the good ones are usually a little longer. And then you're going to be at least a few months on the other side of it, like doing your job search and all that kind of stuff. So like that sounds about right. To be honest, I'm way more familiar with self-taught devs that don't quit their jobs. Most people on boot dev are doing boot dev in like evenings and weekends. And that 1 to 2 year time frame is basically what I tell people. I've seen people do it in less than a year, but again, it's like it's outliers. Most people are in that 1 to 2 year time frame. And frankly, a lot of people are kind of dabbling in code for a while before they even start. And so that can kind of accelerate timelines as well. Like I come across students that have been like kind of watching YouTube tutorials for like maybe 6 months, have maybe like opened a command line, but haven't really seriously started. And those people tend to move faster, right? Because they already have some background knowledge when they kind of like start. But yeah, everything gets really muddy when you start talking to like the actual boots on the ground, because everyone has like a completely different story and how much coding they did in high school and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's, I got to check out a boot.dev because I always say this, there's a lack of resources to truly prepare backend devs for entry level positions. And a lot of coding boot camps claim to do that and they fail at it. So yeah. If you can do that well, you are definitely filling a niche.
That's definitely been our goal. So like to give just a little bit of backstory. So I was a hiring manager on a backend development team writing Go, a little bit of Python and Node. And I was always amazed when kind of my counterpart who ran like the front end side of our team would open a job, like open up a new job and get like 150 applicants. And I'd get like 15. Like it was an order of magnitude difference. Like very, and like I wasn't requiring a CS degree. Half of my team didn't have CS degrees. Like it wasn't a problem. I was just like, why is no one applying for like my back end positions? And yeah, like I started looking around. I was like, there's a ton of great resources for learning front end out there, but there's just not a lot of things that focus on the back end. And like you said, the things that I did see that did talk about back end development, it was usually like back end for front end. It was like Next.js backend, right? Yeah. Or whatever. So I'm like, well, I think it'd be really cool to have a place where you can go learn backend development. So that's how it started. But, you know, I also do look at backend development as like, I think to go the self-taught route, getting that first job, it takes a little bit longer. I don't think it's a lot longer. I think it's maybe like 25% longer. But there's a bit more to learn because I think you will run into more of those kind of like CS type interview questions when applying for backend positions.
That's fair. There's a huge misconception, and maybe it's not a misconception. I feel like it is, though, but everyone tells each other, aim for front end first. Even like aspiring backend developers tell each other, aim for front end first. That's the easiest to get into. But everyone applies for front end. So now you're competing with a ton of other people. So I'm so sorry that you only have 15 applicants.
I could not agree more. Like, this is a huge problem, because if you just look at like the traditional CS model, so a lot of CS grads end up going the backend route, I think, for the reason that like a traditional CS education typically starts you with coding. Like, they don't actually like usually start you with HTML. That's like kind of an online learning phenomenon. And like, it makes a lot of sense in a lot of contexts. A lot of people that are learning online are just trying to deploy a website or something like that. So it can make sense to start with HTML. And certainly if you're mostly interested in front end, it can make sense to start with HTML. But yeah, like if your goal is to become a back end engineer, I think it's insanity. Like, I think you can just start with the command line, right? Start building some scripts. Like, coding is not that hard in the sense that you can't just jump into it. I think you definitely can. It's just a different path.
Yeah, I completely agree. I definitely want to check out your program a little bit more though after this.
Yeah, yeah. I'll get you a membership. No worries.
Okay, cool. Sounds good.
Cool. All right, so we've covered a bit of your story, and now I want to get into like you breaking into the market with that first job, because obviously you're a self-taught developer. What was that first job like? Like, what did you do there, and how did you get your foot in the door?
Well, so I used to live code on Twitch a while back, and my first boss actually was a Twitch user. He's a gamer. We literally play games once a week still to this day. And right now we're playing Baldur's Gate 3. Back then, I don't even know what we talked about, but that's all, like, that's how the conversation started. We talked about games in the interview, and he actually, what I would do in my cover letter, I would include my Twitch link. I'm like, hey, you know, I don't remember how I worded it, but something like, I know you're kind of taking a chance on new developers, but if you actually want to see me code and see what I can do, check out my Twitch stream. I actually stream these days, these times. And he did. And he watched it. And his boss actually had a bias against boot camp grads. And I think he just like he would interview boot camp grads that like would struggle on like a for loop. You know, something really fundamental that he's like, this, you spent like this amount of money and this long to learn this. And so he didn't trust coding boot camps. And so I was actually up against that. And so I don't know if both of them did or my immediate boss just checked it out, but he watched a live stream. He watched me code. I think he watched a couple of sessions, and I skipped a technical interview. Everyone else had a technical interview. They didn't even interview me. So they got to actually see me code, and I was speaking out loud with a live coding stream. So they got to hear how I would process things and work through problems. And I purposefully did that because I was trying to help other people. And yeah, we honestly, it was a casual conversation. We just talked about like what I liked about React, what I hated about React. It was very casual. And then that was it. And then eventually I did get that position. And then when I got into that position, it was overwhelming. I thought I was going to get fired for like the first 3 months because I had that imposter syndrome. It was just racing in my mind, but I didn't. And I got along with people and I got along with other departments, and I realized they actually respect my opinion as a developer. I'm like, that's crazy. I'm so, like, they're asking me technical questions, but for some reason it took so long for my mind to switch. Like, I'm actually a professional. Like, I can actually speak coding. I like, you can trust me to build something. And it took a while for that to switch. But I think that humbleness in me helped me connect with so many other departments. And from there, I started feature work really early. I kind of started with some bugs initially just to get a feel for the code base, how the data is flowing, how things are organized. But I started with feature work, and it was just me and my immediate boss. We were just a front end team. The back end team was about maybe five people. And then we had the CTO. Yeah, it was basically a UI engineering position with Django. I touched Python barely, but it was mainly just HTML, CSS, building a lot of landing pages. We had some like really quirky JavaScript. I convinced my boss, let's get rid of jQuery. We just use a couple of methods. Let's just rebuild these methods. And then we had a React portion. So we'd build on top of that, but it was a heavy front end position. And it was one of my favorite dev positions, and the company went under, unfortunately, but I liked it.
That's really cool. And so this, like, I don't know if it was like an overt strategy at the time, but this like strategy of, I call it providing signal up front. So like when a hiring manager is looking through a bunch of candidates, right, at the end of the day, they just want to know like which of these people is going to make my life easier, right? Who's going to be able to ship code? Who's going to do a good job? And the typical interview process is like you're spending all this time as the manager calling people, bringing them in for interviews, trying to like extract the signal from the noise, right? Like, does this person actually know what they're talking about? Can they solve problems? And like when you stream on Twitch and they can go watch a VOD or they can go see what you're doing, that provides so much upfront signal, right? It like eliminates a bunch of worries. You've like seen this person writing code. You've seen them like working through the process. So you can just like skip that whole section of the interview. I mean, that usually doesn't happen at large companies, but at small companies, it certainly can. And I'm not saying everyone needs to go out there and start streaming on Twitch and gather a following, but like there are definitely ways that you can provide signal up front, whether it's a really great project on GitHub, you know, something open source, a video, a blog, whatever. I think that can be a great way to break into the industry.
Yeah. And I appreciate that insight. One thing I hear from hiring managers like you is like, you got to navigate through a lot of noise. And that's the key. Like hiring managers, you have your own responsibilities and now you have to fill a position. That's going to be a huge time consumption in itself. And you have so much noise. You have so many aspiring developers or developers saying like, I can do this, when a lot can't. A lot of are overselling themselves. They're lying, or like they just, you know, there's a lot of resumes to go through. You got to figure out like how to even, and ever there's no traditional structure for a resume. I've seen so many different resumes, and navigating through that crapshoot seems like just something I don't want to do. But yeah, so it's, there's so much noise, and that's the key thing. If you can be transparent, and this is like a lot of people, they just don't feel confident enough. They don't feel like I felt when I started that job. I'm like, I didn't want to speak up. I'd sound stupid. I didn't see myself as a professional, and like, I didn't feel like I deserved the respect as a professional developer. And but that confidence built the more I did speak up, the more I got, though I just talked to people and I could feel that respect in the room and we could have conversations. And but like a lot of, especially newer developers, they don't have the confidence. So they don't want to put themselves out there. They don't want to make a post. Like, share your opinion on LinkedIn. Like, just you learned a new concept or you picked up a new framework. What do you think about it? Like, get that engagement. Even that engagement pushes your post through the algorithm. And if someone else likes it, it pushes it through their algorithm where other people can find you, right? Like, but you, whether it's live coding, whether it's participating in a hackathon, whether it's going to meetups and just meeting other developers, like get out there. But everyone just wants to be very introverted and just, they don't want to share what they're thinking. They don't want to share their process. They don't want to meet other people. They don't have that confidence. And I'm an introvert at heart. I had to force this, and other people, they need to force this. You don't have to like be this amazing social person that's just sharing every single update. And I don't think you necessarily should be, but just pushing yourself outside of your comfort zone, sharing like a little tutorial or just like you live coding, even if you're not that great, who cares? You're learning as a developer, and other developers are going to respect that from you. As long as you're humble, like they're going to love you. But not enough people just put themselves out there like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I completely agree. So if you look at like everyone who's learning to code online, everyone's consuming, right? People are listening to this podcast. People are watching YouTube. People are reading tutorials. Everyone's consuming. And there's nothing wrong with consuming, but it's not enough. And the people who are really succeeding are the ones that are balancing that consumption of information with like outputs. And I would categorize most outputs as either building stuff, which is like table stakes. You got to be building stuff. You got to be coding. And then what you said, which is like an output of like conversing with people, right? Chatting in Discords about code or going to live meetups or whatever. There's all these ways that you can, it's almost becoming a producer of like quote unquote content. And whether that content is like, you know, what you traditionally consider content, like a YouTube video or a blog or whatever, or it's just you having a conversation with another engineer and bouncing ideas off of them, like that interactivity, I feel like is where you really start to pull out ahead of the pack of, you know, just all the people that are, just, you know, watching tutorials on YouTube.
Yeah, I don't disagree with anything you just said. Absolutely. And it, like, that's the thing. I think when people think networking, it's this like weird kind of stuffy vision that people have for it. And it doesn't like just getting yourself out there, like you said, just even being active building projects. That's probably one of the main things. But like, even if you're trying to be social, it doesn't have to be going to some stuffy networking event. Like, do you have a library you were wanting to pick up? And like, what happens in your city if a meetup pops up and they're just going over some of the fundamentals? That's awesome. Like, at the very least, like, go there, say hi to one person and head out, get some knowledge from it. But yeah, you're right about the consumption. A lot of people do consume way too much and they don't actually act on it.
Yeah. So I want to start getting into some more tactical stuff. I know you talk to a ton of new and aspiring developers and you've got a lot of insights in this area. So to set the stage, my first question is, like, a lot's changed in tech over the last decade. How has the landscape for self-taught developers changed over the last few years? Like, you'll hear advice from 2015 that, I don't know, maybe it's out of date, or like advice from 2020 that, again, like, a lot's changed in the last 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, let me start with this. So when I got my dev job about my first dev job about 7 years ago, around then, I would say compared to then, the bar for entry level has risen about 1 year of experience, meaning you would need about 1 year of experience 7 years ago to then get hired now. Now, that experience, when I say you need that experience, I'm talking about like the level of technical expertise that you need. So the bar has definitely risen, and you have to recognize that. So people have this misconception that like companies just aren't hiring entry-level developers anymore. And that has gone down. But I think people have this misconception of like, because what happens is they try to sell themselves as a mid-level developer, a senior-level developer. And they do it in these really weird and dishonest ways where they just have to realize that their coding bootcamp, their self-taught path, it's not getting them far enough. And that's a key thing. It's not getting them far enough. So whatever educational route you choose, you know, everyone has different income and different financial situation. Understand that, like, just because your coding bootcamp or self-taught education didn't get you all the way there to be noticed by a lot of companies and seriously considered, you're still a huge chunk of the way there. And so the big difference is you just got to keep going a little bit further. And especially with your project work, there are so many projects that are very surface level. And like, when I would ask people to walk through those projects, they clearly lack fundamental knowledge. They don't really understand why they implemented something. They don't understand why they're following a convention. Like, it's okay to pick up a convention, but understand why that convention exists. For example, like, I see a lot of new developers now where you can kind of get away with this 7 years ago, but where they have a React app and I'm just like, they have no vanilla JavaScript projects. They haven't built anything without React. They don't really understand what React solves, how it works under the hood, right? And so like, one actually trick that I did in my coding bootcamp, or they had us do, was before we dove into React, we used jQuery just to get a little exposure with it, but we built the virtual DOM and a little state management with it, right? And then it was kind of annoying to manage all that. It was way more code than what was needed, but then we dove into React and we kind of understood what was happening with React, right? A lot of new developers, I think they've been sold on this dream that it's going to be easy to break into tech and that it's just like the dream of becoming a software engineer, and they don't really go through the grind to truly understand and get a solid foundation. They're just learning surface level knowledge. And I get so many questions. This triggers me. It just does at this point. But they're like, okay, I've learned HTML. Don, when am I allowed to go to CSS? Don, when am I allowed to go to JavaScript? And they have these like mastery-based milestones, but they're not building any projects. And so I'm like, okay, cool. You're not going anywhere until you build some stuff with HTML. Just build like, you know, basic HTML file. But like, I don't know who's pushing this or who's giving this misconception, but everyone is just learning so much surface level knowledge. And I think the difference is that you have to understand that the education being taught is, I think it's more for profit than actually preparing software engineers. I think many software engineers, the skill level needed to get that job is actually higher now, but the level of aspiring developers has actually gone down. And I see that as being And then people, once they realize that, they're like, crap, I still have maybe like a year of like heavy project work ahead of me. Then they give up, then they get discouraged. And they're like, you know, cause you invest so much time into it. So it's like really the big difference is like really get that foundations down, build projects, build early. Don't get stuck into tutorial hell. If you go through like a 15-minute little module in a course, like supplement it with 45 minutes of coding on the side, do the challenge in a slightly different way. It forces your mind to think about it in a slightly more complex manner. And you got to implement it through a like if you actually are solving a problem through the this little loop that you just built, think about like what, you know, what something practical I could build with this loop. It forces your mind to think about it more critically and it reinforces that concept. But the education, to me, it just seems like a lot of educational programs are just trying to make a lot of money and they skip over a lot of foundations. And but people are demanding, like, you need to teach me the most advanced React concepts. That's how I know this this educational program is like the best educational program. Yet that educational program just skips over so many fundamental concepts. And there's just this huge misconception of what you're supposed to do to become a software engineer. So the big difference is, like, the foundations needs to be solid. You have to understand that the educational program probably isn't going to get you there, and you're going to have to supplement tons with project work and just little articles, reading documentation. I'm kind of just ranting, but yeah,
are my thoughts with that. I love that. I'm so glad I had you on, because a lot of what you're saying really resonates with me. One of our mottos at Boot Dev is delve deeper. And kind of a heuristic that I use is, I think you should at any point kind of understand one layer lower than where you're actually doing most of your work, right? So I think the jQuery example was fantastic, right? Like, if you're working a lot in React, like, you need to just understand one layer lower, like, pretty well. Because, again, most of the time you won't actually be writing vanilla JavaScript, maybe. But, like, you still need to understand how it works, because when a bug pops up, like, that's what qualifies you to be able to fix it, right? And so, you know, like, to kind of give the analogy on the back end side, we teach a lot of Go programming language on Boot Dev for, like, building REST APIs and things like that. And one of the things about Go is that actually very few companies use frameworks when working with Go. It's kind of a lot of vanilla Go, so to speak, standard library stuff. And that was really eye-opening to me when I came to work in Go, because my first job was doing kind of back-end work in Django, which we have that similarity as well. And I was frankly quite confused in Django, just because there's a lot of magic that happens for you. And I didn't understand that one layer lower, and I was a much worse engineer for it. So I think it's really important to just go a little bit deeper, and it shows. It shows in the interviews. It shows up in your code. Like, yeah. People can tell if you understand, like you said, why you did a thing rather than just you did it and it happens to work.
Yeah, that's really good, especially when fixing some of the quirkier bugs that aren't so obvious. I have one more example, and this is just like it could be used to like really retain what you're learning, because a lot of aspiring developers, they get frustrated because they don't remember. That's a big common complaint. But like, I remember I could not learn Laravel when I was learning PHP. I thought I was going to be a PHP developer. I dodged that, but I was trying to learn Laravel. I couldn't understand MVC. I couldn't get it down. I just couldn't conceptualize it and remember it and apply it. And then it wasn't until, I think it was like Net Ninja or some other YouTuber provided a way to build your own mini MVC framework. And that, like, it just, once I built that, it took a little bit more time, but then I finally understood how MVC works, how it's separated. And sometimes, like, when you're getting just, you get that blocker, you just got to delve deeper a little bit. I think that's a really good educational strategy to, like, getting something that just wouldn't click for you as well.
Yeah, this is such an interesting topic. Right now I'm struggling with, so we have this functional programming course on Boot Dev, and I really want to shove it right into like the kind of CS basics section of the course, or of the, I should say, like of the learning path, where you learn about things like recursion and function currying and like functions as values. My big concern and the thing that I'm struggling with at the moment is like, I don't want to teach that conceptual stuff before it makes sense why you would ever do that. Like, cool, you taught me this weird recursion thing so that I can iterate over a list, but guess what? I already knew how to iterate over a list, right?
Yeah.
So I'm like currently working through a lot of that stuff from like an instructional design perspective. But getting it right is tricky and but important for sure.
It is. I, of course, do what you want to do. I highly recommend, like you were starting to consider, like when I actually need to know recursion. For example, like when I was rebuilding a jQuery method, we had a bunch of like nested classes that we had to loop through to get to a certain class. And that was when recursion finally clicked for me. And so I love the idea of teaching it when it's practical. It just sticks better.
Right. Like, to be perfectly honest, really the only time I use recursion, and I mean, I do use it in my professional job, is like, yeah, when I'm looping over some kind of like tree-like structure, right? Where there's like an unknown depth to the tree, like just parsing JSON, right? Like that happens a lot. Trying to parse down through JSON or Python dictionary or something. And like, it doesn't make sense until you kind of come across that in you know, some kind of project. But
I completely agree. Yeah.
Cool. Okay. So I love this backdrop. Now I want to talk about something very specific, cover letters. I get asked about cover letters all the time. I think I lucked out when I was applying to my first jobs where I just like didn't do cover letters and that worked for me. But I don't, I cannot say that's a good strategy because there was no reasoning to why I didn't do it. It was just like, oh, I'm going to optimize for how many like resumes I could submit. And this was like 8 years ago. So how do you think about cover letters and what are you seeing with from the people you talk to?
Yeah, so I hear a lot of like blanketed advice that either everyone should do cover letters or no one should do cover letters. And I think there's nuance that people need to consider. So if you are taking the extra time to submit a templated cover letter where you're just changing a few words and submitting that to every single company, I think cover letters are a complete waste of your time. Just spit your resume out. You should have like different versions of a resume. Like if you're applying for a front end position versus a back end position, that's going to look very different. You're going to highlight different projects, different skills. But for a cover letters are extremely effective at making you stand up. There's important things that you need to take note of. Most of the time, the engineering team won't see your cover letters, even in startups. HR sees your cover letters. HR cares about different things, but a couple things they really care about is like longevity, a fit into the culture, into the company, and trying to kind of assess what the engineering needs are as best as that engineering or that HR person can. But you, like, it's a huge cultural fit at that HR screening. And you know, assessing for like a minimum technical skill level, but they'll look at the cover letter. When you do a little bit of research into the company where you actually show like you want to work there, this isn't just another company that you're spitting out your resume to, like this is interesting and this is why it's interesting, right? Take a little bit of time to look at their values. What does the company care about, right? What kind of products do they build? Like, I highly recommend you apply at companies of products that you use and you understand it. Like, part of the process of like understanding the code base and how everything pieces together is like understanding the product that can help you kind of just link things within the code base. And you caring about the product means you care about the users. If you care about the users, you are really valuable, right? I think we've gone past the era of just like hiring a bunch of code monkeys that just say, give me the requirements and I'm going to spit out code. ChatGPT will replace you eventually, right? There's so much more to being a software engineer that will make you stand out and you need to lean on that. So becoming a user-centered developer that cares about the users of the company, and you're also indirectly going to care about the business needs. You're going to make those considerations as an engineer because like sometimes you're pushing back as a software engineer. Sometimes you're trying to be empathetic towards other departments and other needs within the company or even with clients. But you caring about like what the company is trying to achieve and you showing that you care about the users is huge. And like even if you kind of include in your cover letter, like maybe you follow someone within that company and they created a blog article. Maybe it was a CTO and like, this is how he or she likes to run their engineering teams. And like this, like they really, for some reason, care about this like really strong conventional pattern, or they care about like I don't know, I'm lacking examples, but they do care about something that kind of rings a bell with you. And you're just like, accessibility, like no companies care about this anymore. Like, I love that you care. Like, if you can attach to something like that and include it and be like, I love what your CTO mentioned. Honestly, like, I've been lacking this in my career and this is exactly what I'm looking for, right? Just you showing that kind of personal touch where you can really see this company aligning with you. You can see a long-term future. You kind of like, you've done a little bit of research into the company. That's golden. There's so many people that just spit their resumes out and they BS throughout the interview, and it shows, and that authenticity will go a long way in a cover letter. But you keep that cover letter short. It doesn't need to be one page, two pages, like maybe a paragraph or two, but like show that you actually want to work at the company, and you could bring up your skills, show that, like summarize how it aligns as well, but just like one or two paragraphs to be able to do that. That becomes a really effective cover letter. And once you get efficient with that process, you could probably, I wouldn't take more than 30 minutes to do your research, submit the resume and cover letter for each company. And I wouldn't go past submitting your resume and cover letter to 15 companies, because once you start getting past that, especially if you have a lot of time to be able to do that, like if you're part-time, you're probably going to trim that number down. But a lot of people, they're like, oh yeah, I submitted my application to like 50 companies. I'm like, there's no way you did you did research within the company. You didn't submit any cover letters. Like, you probably just have some random templated resume. They have, you know, 200, 300 other applicants that are doing that. So I think cover letters are very effective if you make them effective. But if you're not going to make them effective, don't waste your time.
I really like that perspective. The one thing I want to also add on top of it is, I think it's exactly like you said, if you're going to put the effort into the cover letter, it can help a lot, actually. And I would argue it probably that help is maybe magnified at smaller companies, where you are more likely to have someone from the team at some point reading that cover letter, and they do care about, you know, whether or not you care about the company and whether you not care about, like you said, users and things like that. Cover letters can make it worse. In my experience, if someone gives me a cover letter that is obviously a template and says nothing, like is not personalized in any way to the company, like it doesn't mention anything we do, it doesn't mention the name of the company, like you could just copy and paste it and give it to any company in the world, that makes it worse to me, because I know that you're just blasting your resume to a million different companies and that you're not particularly interested in working here. So I would agree with you, not even just from the saving your own time perspective, but if you're going to make a generic cover letter, I think it would actually make it worse than just giving your resume. Because at least if you just give your resume, I'm not 100% sure like that you're just blasting and spamming everyone with your resume. So that's the only thing I'd add there.
That's a really good point. That's good insight. I didn't even think about it making it worse, but I almost feel like it'd become kind of annoying to have to read through so many templated cover letters. It's like, if you're going to put low effort into it, at least get straight to the point.
Yeah. And it actually provides signal. It provides the wrong signal. It provides signal to the hiring manager that, like, you are spamming this to everyone, yeah, and that I shouldn't feel bad about just tossing your resume. So yeah, you definitely don't want to be providing bad signal up front.
Yeah, because I appreciate you sharing that.
Yeah, as a manager, I'm actually looking for excuses to throw resumes away, right? I've got like 30 and I'm trying to trim it down to 10. And like anything that just like makes me want to throw it away, it's like, oh, I'll just throw it away. Like, default to throwing it away. So you definitely don't want to give people a reason to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's good advice.
Cool. Next question I have for you, somewhat related, is the idea of like cold applying versus like doing something to warm up the interaction. Do you recommend people do both, or do they split their time, or just kind of the networking thing? How do you think about that?
Yeah. This one could be a little bit more complex. I think the default answer is like networking is king for a lot of people, but this one has nuance as well. You can submit a templated DM that, like, to, you know, HR, and a lot of people like try to connect with, let me give this example. So when I was a software engineer, it was my second company. or a second deposition, I would have people reach out that obviously wanted to work at that company. They, you know, had been given the advice to just reach out to software engineer and have coffee. And I would always make them commit to buying me a coffee to just make sure that they were committed. I'd never actually make them pay for it. I just buy it when I actually got there. But I wanted to, you know, I wanted to get past the feeling of like, okay, if I'm going to give you some of my time to talk about software engineering, like at least take it seriously. And that's what I was trying to weed out. And so like as a hiring manager, you probably have to do that a lot. But there were different engineers that were very upfront, that were very honest, authentic, very authentic. And they would just like, you know, I'm really interested in your company, but I also want to like really get a feel for what it's like to work at this company. I had a bad experience before. And I honestly, you know, before I even apply, I want to get a feel for it. Is that okay? I'll buy you coffee. And that, like, that's fine. I love that. But people that would kind of just like have like very lazy, tiny messages and expect me to like take my lunch and have coffee. Like I would actually take part of my lunch as a developer and go have coffee with them. And they wouldn't even like be willing to pay for the coffee. Again, I never made them pay, but like they weren't really committed. It felt like they did that for 50 different companies. I'm like, I'm not going to waste my time with you. Like this actually feels crappy that you're doing this. So a lot of people have this misconception, like reaching out to the engineering team or reaching out to HR, you always have to do it. Not necessarily if you're going to do it with that kind of strategy. If you want to do it, like I think showing interest, genuine interest when you're doing the cold application approach to then reach out to HR and say, hey, just want to let you know, I'm actually really excited about this position. I love it for these reasons. I just want to let you know, I did submit my resume and I am still interested, right? Just something casual. You could word it a little bit different. That can make your cold approach a little bit more effective. But ideally, the other approach, and you got to dedicate a little bit of time to this. I don't think you have to dedicate like 4 hours every day to this, but like go to a meetup, participate in a hackathon, get involved with the developer community, meet other developers, not as a salesman saying, hey, can you get me a job? Don't ask for that value immediately with that person. Just treat it like any other interaction. Provide that value up front. Have a casual conversation. Make it fun to talk to you. And just like, you know, ask what they're doing. Like genuinely be interested in what they're doing. If you do that, an indirect effect is usually people want to hear what you're doing. They want to hear, you know, what you're going for. But a lot of people take this approach and they just like act like a salesman. They actually get a business card, which is fine. But their goal is to just give that business card out to everyone that they're a developer. And if they're looking for a developer, right? So I think how you do it, you have to, I think a very warm approach that's very effective is to get involved with the developer community, meet people, talk to them, have an empathetic conversation with them. And I see that naturally, it's a more long-term strategy, in my opinion. But that'll naturally build up your network. And even if you're doing it with other aspiring developers, that aspiring developer gets hired. And the company, before they even make the public job posting, they're like, hey, they just reach out to the team. Hey, do you guys know anyone that might be a good fit for this, right? You already are standing out among so many other cold applications by that aspiring developer that likes you. They had a good interaction with you. They kind of, whether they like, hopefully they can have a little assessment of like where you are technically, maybe they worked on a project, but still like that's a cultural fit that's getting you in the door. And now you have that in. So don't focus so much on like trying to meet, like go to networking events to meet the right people. Just talk with other people. Have those empathetic conversations, build those connections, and just be a human being and try to give back to the developer community. That eventually gets noticed when you're transparent enough to have all these conversations. So a natural warm approach is very effective in the long run, and it typically can get you so many interviews, because a lot of people just struggle getting interviews. That can get you an interview so you can actually speak. You're not just a piece of paper. And then you can warm up to them in the interview. Then it's the same approach. It's just an empathetic conversation, having fun talking like about Twitch and gaming, whatever you can relate to, and like what you love, like what you're passionate about with coding and engineering. And like, but you got to let that conversation flow naturally. And that warm, like it's just about building connections with those warm leads. That's effective. I would argue you should probably spend, I don't know, I usually say, spend maybe 2 to 4 hours per week just really trying to get connected with developers and building up your network and just creating relationships. And I don't think majority of your time should be spent towards project work, hands down, just really building up your skills, but like a little bit of time extra and just getting involved in the dev community is huge. So I think that the networking, the warm leads, it's a more effective approach, but it's a long-term approach. So if you're struggling, you're like, I need a job right now, probably should consider picking up a part-time job or something else, get your income in order, because it's building relationships and building that network can take a little bit of time. It's effective, but you know, if you're doing it short-term, you're going a hard, cold application approach.
There was so much in there I wanted. I want to reiterate. It was good. I loved what you said about, so like providing value up front when you're talking to people. Like you said, you kind of vetted people by like, were they at least willing to buy a coffee? It's like the dating equivalent is like, well, at least buy me dinner first, right? People, generally speaking, like we're all human. And it's not like everyone else out there is just looking to do you a favor, right? I get those kinds of DMs where it's like, random person, never met them before. Do you have a job for me? Like, no, I don't have a job for you. If I had a job available, I would give it to a friend or someone I know that is looking. Like, why would I give it to you whom I don't know, as like you've never interacted with me before? So yeah, the idea of getting to know people on like a genuine human level first, at least qualifies you to be able to get some of those warm connections, coming down the pipe later. And then what you ended on there when you were talking about, you know, if you're strapped for time, the best piece of advice I can give in that kind of a situation where you're like, I need a job now, or like, I'm not going to be able to eat next month, is like, please don't put yourself in that situation. You know what I mean? Like, it makes me so nervous when people like quit their job to do self-learning. So the big advantage of self-learning is that you can do it on nights and weekends and you don't have to quit your job and you can keep like paying. Like, this is not an industry that you get into in 3 months. Like, we talked about this earlier, right? Like, do what you can to give yourself, in like startup speak, give yourself runway, like give yourself as much runway as you can, right? A year, 2 years, so that you can learn this stuff at a deeper level, so that you can do some networking, build some connections, and you'll just have such a higher chance of success. Again, in the long run. So I don't even have good advice. Like you said, you could do a lot of cold applying. That certainly could work if you're like time strapped, but I honestly don't even have good advice if you're strapped for time, just because it's such a tricky situation to be in the first place.
Well, I think there's a huge, I love what you said. I completely agree with everything. There's a huge misconception that like, oh, maybe I should just do like freelancing, or maybe I should, you know, do something like that. But even freelancing, like that's way more than being a developer. That's running a business. That's understanding legal. That's understanding like building a contract. If you don't have a contract with freelancing, that's a liability. And a
now
lot
you're
of people,
marketing
like,
yourself to customers, right?
Marketing is huge. I'm trying to learn marketing. I suck at it. I still suck at it. It's a huge venture. But yeah, it's like my recommendation is like, get a part-time job. Like, there are a lot of part-time jobs hiring. Get a part-time job. Get like you said, you never should have put yourself in that situation to begin with. I think most people put themselves into that situation. Sometimes people have it happen to them, but like, stop. Like, you got to realize maybe it's going to take longer. Just get your finances in order, pick up that part-time job. And if you can, try to prevent that from ever happening in the first place. I'm really leaning towards with this market, like, just don't quit your job. Just keep paying the bills, do it on the side. That's probably the best thing for most people right now.
Yeah, I completely agree. What do you think are some of the biggest mistakes that kind of first-time job searchers make in respect to their actual resume?
Their resume. So I have, you can cut this out if you want, but I'll just do a little shout out. I sometimes do these resume reviews and I am very, very critical, and I have fun with it. I roast it. I give people a heads up. I'm going to do this, but so many people literally have a resume speaking to them, like not even being a software engineer. I have like 5 bullet points in each different position that has nothing to do with tech or being a software engineer. I'm like, are you even a software engineer? This looks horrible. Like you have some like templated like intro of like, I'm a team player, blah, blah, blah. And then like the rest of your resume is filled up with five bullet points of you like working at Home Depot or something like that. And there's nothing wrong with that to pay the bills, but where is the software engineer experience? Like there's nothing about this on the resume. And so many people do this and they try to leverage other positions that aren't even tech related. And they think employers want to see that. No. Personal projects, build your portfolio. Like what did you solve? What kind of problems did you solve? I usually recommend at a certain point, like try to build a SaaS product, even if it's not going to be successful, solve a real problem. Start with solving your own problem, right? That's how a lot of companies are founded and how a lot of SaaS products are built. Solve your own problem, but like treat it like a real professional project and highlight that, right? What happens when you get users? What happens when you can figure out a metric to show that you saved customers money by using your product over another? That's huge. You're building professional software that's actually helping real users. And that's a really strong portfolio project. And instead you've decided to highlight, you know, like your responsibilities at Home Depot. Like there's just so many better things that you could be doing with your resume and showcasing yourself. So I think a huge mistake is not selling yourself as a software engineer. And again, I want to really emphasize this because I think some people just flat out lie. I'm not saying to pretend like you were a software engineer at a made up company. I'm talking about like just showcasing in your portfolio that you can build a real software that feels professional, has a landing page if you need to, like if, even if you want to outsource the landing page for this developer tool that you built, like that's huge. You get a domain for it. That looks way more professional. Once you get users behind it, you can get some analytics. That's the ideal portfolio project in my opinion. So it's aiming for something, aiming to build portfolio projects that look and feel professional as much as you can as a new developer, of course. But then you highlight like at least half of your resume should speak to that portfolio, the projects you've built, the problems that you've solved, and your skills as a software engineer. So I think that's a huge common mistake. And a lot of resumes are just they're filled with fluff, or they're talking about non-tech things throughout the entire resume, and it just doesn't sell them as a software engineer.
I'm amazed at the number of people that will put, you know, a year, 2 years into learning, into building projects, and then like 5 minutes into their resume, right? It's like, I mean, you know this, you're in the YouTube game. Like you don't make a good YouTube video and spend a day, 2 days, a week making a video and then like just slap up a thumbnail and a title, right? You take a second to like put that, you're putting a cover on this thing that you like put a lot of work into. And that's the thing people see first. And if they're just throwing it away immediately, they're never going to be able to uncover all of that other work that you did. I'm going to shout out Matt again. I'm pretty sure he'll be cool with this. Matt has recently like really gotten into his job search. So he did like the full back end career path on Boot Dev. He's built a ton of projects. He built this really cool project in Go. It's a library for developers who are building like command line tools to be able to kind of buffer standard out. So like, you know how when you're in a shell and you tap the up arrow, it like gives you past commands. So it's like this buffering tool. It's a really cool tool. And he was just asking for like some, you know, resume kind of feedback in our Discord channel. And I pulled up that project and the resume was not, or not the resume, sorry, the readme of the project like was not good. It was like pretty much bare. And he updated it the next day after some feedback from myself and the community, and it looks so good. And it's such an impressive project. And like just putting it, you know, it didn't take him as long as building the project to update that readme and make it look good. But now it's like, okay, I see that and I'm actually going to dive in and see what he built, you know?
That's really cool. You're right. A lot of people, they're present, like, they spent so long, but the presentation, it feels like they didn't invest a lot of time into it. I think at a certain point, I think people just get exhausted. Mm. And I think they don't really like when I talk with people, because I offer one-on-ones, when I talk with people, a lot of them are just exhausted. They spent so much time and they're just frustrated. And even just like trying to get them to, it'll take about 10 minutes, but trying to get them to like, okay, convince them to be able to spend more time on their resume, change up their job search, try to be more effective with it. I know a lot of people just like humor me and say, yeah, I'm going to do that. And they never do it. But it's like you're just shooting yourself in the foot with that. You spent so much time building yourself up, presentation is everything. Job search, you know, putting time into that takes a lot. And you're going to give up now? It's like, man, you're so close. Like, just invest a little bit more time into it and you're going to see results. You're going to get that motivation because that one company finally gives you a chance to interview, right? That's what happens when you care about that presentation. You invest time into it.
Yeah. You've done so much of the work. You've got 90% of the way there. I'm going to tell one more story really quick. This is not anyone. This is someone that I knew like back when I was in college. So I was getting my CS degree. I think I was like a junior, maybe a sophomore at the time in college. And I met this guy who'd graduated from the same college that I went to, also with a CS degree. He was working as a janitor. And I was like, uh-oh, like I'm all of a sudden I'm like really scared for myself. I'm like, oh no, like this guy got a CS degree. He seems pretty smart. Like I've been talking to him and like he wasn't able to find a job. Lo and behold, like when I graduated, I didn't really have too much of a trouble finding a job. But like just looking back, I'm fairly confident after talking to him that he was just one of those that like did the full degree, got to the end, like you said, was probably exhausted and just didn't want to put in that last like 10% of effort because the jobs were there and he had the skills. And I'm really sad that he didn't, you know, push himself just a little bit farther and land that job. And who knows, maybe he's landed the job by now, but it's one of those like cautionary tales.
That is sad. Do you think it's also what do you think about like traditional education? Do you think once we are finally released from traditional education that it's prepared us to be resourceful to actually navigate some of the like really quirky behaviors of life in general? Like I feel like a lot of people are just so used to being trained for people to tell them what to do. I'm wondering if that's what's holding people back.
Oh man, we need to do like another podcast episode about like all the things that are wrong with the traditional education system. But yeah, one of the things, are you talking about like the general education system, how like when you go to college, like roughly half of your time is spent on like non-job applicable things?
That is a thing, but I'm also talking about the structure of education where just like even, I guess I'm also comparing it to like how you become a software engineer, even this idea of like, okay, you have a course and all like your goal is to just get an A in the course. It's to memorize what you need to know to be able to pass the course. And it just, it's very modular and it doesn't really take a lot of like practice. It doesn't integrate it into a practical setting, solving any real problems that you will face in your actual career. Now, I know there are some courses that are better than others that will get you to do that, but I feel like it's more of like trying to integrate people into like linking what they're learning into something practical, which they're probably going to, if it's useful, they're going to have to constantly like apply that knowledge to reinforce it, to remember it because this is useful. But I feel like people have just been trained to memorize and then forget it when they're done with the course.
Okay, yeah, I think I get what you're asking. And I've thought a lot about this. Most degrees that you can choose at like a four-year college are academic degrees, right? They're not career paths in the sense that like at the end of an English degree, you get an English job, right? Like there's lots of things that like theoretically an English degree could help you with. But like at the end of the day, universities are like concerned with higher education and academia and just like kind of learning for the sake of learning in a lot of cases. Yeah. Software engineering is such an interesting profession to me because I kind of look at it as a mix of like trade and engineering. So like when you think of like an electrical engineer or a mechanical engineer, very rarely are they out, you know, ratcheting nuts in on the car on the assembly line, right? They're designing the systems and they're doing the math that allows you to build the car. The tradespeople are out like doing the work, right? Like you could, to use like an electrical analogy, you've got like the electrician is kind of the tradesperson and the electrical engineer is like designing the system. Software engineering is fascinating to me because like as a software engineer, you just have to do both. Like in order for you to be able to do, like by being qualified enough to design the system, you're also, you tend to be one of the only people qualified enough to code the system. And so like you're just doing both things. And that's like, that doesn't seem to exist anywhere else. And so when I talk to CS grads, I tend I feel like on the CS side, we get too much of the theory in the academia and like what you would maybe consider like the engineering side, or engineering is like the wrong word, the like the academic side. And then a lot of times with bootcamp grads, it can be the opposite, where you get a lot of practical knowledge, but maybe not enough of the theory, maybe not enough of the math that kind of backs some of these ideas. So depending on which route you take, I think you need to kind of self unbias as much as you can.
Yeah. When you were describing that, I think you make a really good point. Yeah, software engineering is a unique in that respect. I guess I'm also thinking about, I'm just trying to figure out why so many people coming out of college will, I mean, even move back in with their parents instead of just picking up like a couple of part-time jobs, or figuring out like that I actually need to be aggressive and reach out to a bunch of companies before this happens. I feel like, I guess I'm thinking it's like, it's more of a safety net. Like you're going through traditional education, it's a huge safety net, and you don't, like, I feel like none of my courses, none of my professors even really taught me to prepare. Like, life is going to be brutal outside of this traditional educational system. Like, these bills are coming up. I don't even know how to manage my finances. And maybe it's even just like a lack of practical courses to get me through life. But I feel like I meet a lot of people that come out of traditional education that aren't very resourceful when they're outside of traditional education. They're not very self-disciplined outside of traditional education. It's like all those habits that they built up within that safety net. And then all of a sudden, when they experience real life, it just, where did they go?
Yeah. Okay. I get what you're saying now. My perception, and it could be way off, is that like a cultural shift has happened, especially like I've only been able to observe it in the States. I'm sure there's tons of cultural shifts happening all over the world, but you know, like what I perceive from like the 60s, the 70s is like, parents would give their kids the advice, like, go to college. We're going to save for your college because it will mean that if you get this degree, like, you'll be qualified for like high paying jobs. Right. And you'll be able to, you'll essentially get access to all these jobs that like a lot of other people don't have access to. They have to go work like manual labor, basically. Right. It like gets you out of like the manual labor, low paid jobs and into these like higher paid office jobs. And I think that advice that was given, like in our parents' generation, maybe, was so ubiquitous that like everyone started doing it, and college just became the default thing you do. And I think what's happened is like, now there's just a lot of jobs that like, yeah, you can do with a degree, you can also do without a degree, but like employers care far less about the degree because it's no longer this like, it's no longer this high bar, this high threshold, right? And it's almost like the threshold has changed. It's in a lot of ways less academic and more based on like specific skills that you can bring to a company. But as far as, you know, what you were saying about like people moving back in with their parents after college, I don't know if it seems like a mental thing of like, I graduated from college, I should be qualified for these like super high paying jobs. When you hit reality and maybe you're not, I don't know. I haven't been in this situation, but like maybe at that point it's too hard mentally to go back into like, you know, working as a bank teller or working in fast food or retail or whatever. Luckily, like I haven't had to do that, but I could see that being really challenging. Like you spent all this time learning like advanced things and now you feel like it's either I'm going to get this really high paying job or I'm just going to be done. I don't know.
I like that perspective. Okay. It was a random question. I think about the effects of traditional education a lot. And I think coding boot camps have definitely given me a new paradigm to think about. So I appreciate you sharing that. I'm going to think about it a bit more.
Yeah. It's an interesting problem. And yeah, I'll have to do some more thinking as well. Okay. Thank you so much, Don, for coming on. Can you tell everybody where they can find more of your stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. So I would just go to my main YouTube channel, Don the Developer. Basically, right now the schedule is I release a podcast episode once a week, and I basically just try to bring on industry experts. I will kind of split between reviewing educational programs. You'll see that I'm pretty unbiased, and I'm a little bit more critical of certain programs depending on if they're charging students more, but I bring on a balanced guest roster of like good reviews and bad reviews. So I try to be unbiased in that way. But ultimately, like, I think a lot of educational programs are selling and they're very profit focused. And my focus is on the students and making sure the program's actually right for you. So that's kind of half of my episodes. The other half is really just talking about like how you get into the industry. I give a lot of like no BS advice. I'm very critical. I'm quite frankly, sometimes not here to spare, like consider your feelings when you're feeling down and bad, because I think a lot of people will introduce advice that's been given to them that they're so attached to that they're just like, they really want to make it work. And my advice that I give is focused on practical advice that's sometimes very hard to hear, but I've helped thousands of aspiring developers get through. And if you come to my channel, I'm going to give you very, very honest advice, whether you want to hear it or not. So that's really my focus. And if you're truly stuck, I do offer one-on-one mentorship sessions. There's a link in each video description where you can click on that. I'm not really interested in getting you to latch onto this like 3-5 month coaching session thing, like just one session. Let's figure out why you're getting stuck, and we'll get you some actionable steps on moving forward. That's pretty much just what I offer for people truly struggling. But yeah, that's pretty much it. Check out my YouTube channel. And Blaine, seriously, thank you so much for inviting me onto this.
Yeah, absolutely. I had a blast. Don the Developer on YouTube. Go check it out. Thanks, man.